Welcome to the Society's Child podcast, where we have real conversations about being a trauma-responsive educator in the midst of a significant mental health crisis. Hi, I'm Trish Sinzak, a former educator, compassion advocate, and Jesus lover, and I'm so grateful that you're here. Are you feeling confuzzled about your students' behavior and needs? You're not alone. If trauma-informed strategies leave you wondering, what's next? Don't worry. My friend, I've been there too. As a foster mom and a child of complex trauma mixed with my experience as a teacher, it's led me to finding a compassionate, whole child approach that's evidence-based, practical, and transformational, and I'm so eager to share it with you. Whether you want to connect with your students on a deeper level, create a trauma-sensitive environment, or you just need a little bit of encouragement or support, you're in the right place. So grab a drink, a pen, or your earbuds, and let's work together to create a safe and student-attuned, trauma-responsive school culture. Society's children need you. So let's get started. Hey, educator friends. I'm excited to be here with you today on episode 39. And even more excitedly, this is a season where we have just over 2,000 downloads to this podcast. So that means educators are hearing the tips and strategies and learning how they can be more trauma responsive. And that excites me. So if you're finding anything helpful about this, please click the follow button and leave a review for the show. That is how the platform knows to pass this podcast along. And more importantly, I would be so honored if you would tag this podcast, share it with all of your friends, even put it in some of the groups where you see people and educators struggling and suffering with the things that they're trying to do in the classroom. So today I want to talk to you about, speaking of struggling, compassion fatigue. And this is a term used to describe emotional or physical or mental exhaustion that can result in caring for others. And a lot of times this is actually referred to for people who are caring for the elderly, they're caring for, or they're in caregiving roles, healthcare workers, social workers, first responders, and anybody who encounters individuals in stress. Since the pandemic, we have learned that educators are in that same category, and a lot of the big behaviors in our classrooms, especially for those of us who work in special needs, or those who have kids who are neurodivergent and their behaviors are big, or we have classes that are stocked full of them, this kind of thing can happen. And I don't want to minimize this in any way, but it is something that's happening with educators as well. So what I thought I would do today is I would give you 10 signs and symptoms of compassion fatigue. And I would let you ask yourself, is this truly changing my life? And then we'll talk about what we can do about that. So I want to run through these 10 questions with you to see if this is affecting you. Now, everybody gets exhausted. Everybody has a little bit of these. But if you feel like this has changed your life in a remarkable way with this list of questions, then I want to ask you to seriously look at, okay, what's next? So number one, do you have emotional exhaustion? In other words, you come home constantly feeling drained, overwhelmed, emotionally depleted due to other people's stuff, all the exposure to all the big behaviors. Maybe you don't even have the capacity to be there for your family. And this is not just a day here or there. This is on a regular basis. Number two, do you have decreased empathy? Maybe you aren't unable or you have a decline in the ability to connect emotionally with others. Maybe you feel numb towards it and you really have no way of connecting with their experiences. And again, this is not something once in a while. This is on a consistent basis. Number three, do you have an increased irritability or anger? In other words, you react more negatively to minor frustrations, becoming easily irritated with behavior. Now, we all have those days where we feel stressed and we can easily do this, but is this on a consistent, constant basis? Would your family say right now, oh my goodness, you are constantly angry. What has happened to you? Number four, physical symptoms. So on a regular basis, not just once in a while, do you experience physical manifestations of your stress, such as headaches, muscle tension, fatigue, gastrointestinal issues? Again, on a regular basis, not just once in a while. Number five, do you have difficulty sleeping? Maybe insomnia,
disrupted sleep patterns, nightmares that are related to things going on at work. Number 6, do you have a reduced sense of accomplishment? You feel a lack of satisfaction or a lack of fulfillment in the work, and despite all the efforts you make in making a difference in someone's life. Number 7, do you feel detached or do you tend to isolate? And I'm not talking about something that's been a common thing for you, if that's just the type of person you are, but if you found that you are withdrawing from social interactions and distancing yourself on a regular basis from your colleagues, from your friends, from your family, or from anyone that you typically hang around with, and then it's become that way over a certain period of time, and that's not like you. Number 8, cognitive disturbances. Do you have any of these that show you're experiencing some sort of difficulty with concentration or memory or decision-making as a result of just being totally and completely mentally exhausted? Number 9, do you have a hypersensitivity to trauma triggers? In other words, you have a strong reaction to reminders or triggers of traumatic events. When those events and others come up, it brings up strong reactions to you, or brings up your own stuff. And that might lead to an increased distress in you, or maybe avoidance tendencies or avoidance behaviors. Again, this is not typically like you. This is something as a result of all this. Number 10, do you have a loss of meaning or purpose? Are you questioning your own ability, your own identity, your own value of work, and experiencing basically some sort of a crisis of disillusionment, and you're just totally not the way you used to be in your purpose and in what you're doing? Now, there's the 10 questions I wanted to ask you. If you recognize these signs and symptoms, and you see that this is something that is new for you, it's not the way you've currently always been, maybe there's something else you're working on in therapy or your own underlying life, but if you recognize these signs and symptoms and they do feel like they are as a result of your big behaviors that you're exposed to at work, I want to encourage you to take proactive steps, prioritize your self-care, seek some support, and really get some coping strategies that help you prevent the burnout that's inevitable, that's headed your way if you don't maintain your health and well-being. That is super important. We cannot give from an empty bucket. So how do you do this? And if you're not sure if this is you, or you're still trying to figure out how to do this, the first thing I would encourage you to do is, the big thing you got to do is self-compassion. Looking at yourself and with your own kindness and your own understanding and your own acceptance, basically where you feel like you're failing and where you're inadequate. Many times we can get into those patterns and look at that and either ignore it. We can have coping strategies. We put it off. We deflect it. We go to humor. But I really want to encourage you to look at, if you've got these, any of these that you're saying, and it is affecting your life in a negative way, the first place to start is with some self-kindness. Really being gentle with yourself and understanding, rather than harshly being self-critical, realize that this is a common humanity. Everyone has struggles. Everyone fails. Everyone has imperfections. It's a normal part of the human experience. And that if we understand that everyone goes through this, as we go through it, and we know that it can be challenging in these times of exhaustion, it'll help you alleviate these feelings of isolation and self-blame. If we can be kind to ourselves rather than harshly self-critical, you know, they say when we should ourselves, many times it's really shaming ourselves. So this self-compassion would help us get to a place where we're not really being self-critical, we're being compassionate. We really need to work on being mindful with this. And that means being present and aware of our own thoughts. A lot of times we'll get deflective, we'll go into coping mechanisms, we'll turn to humor, or we'll disassociate instead of being mindful about what our body is feeling. And I want to encourage you to observe your inner dialogue with, really be curious. What am I feeling? Not reactive to what you're feeling, just very curious and observe. Oh, I didn't realize this about myself. And then it helps us become aware, be Before we can get to any sense of change, we have to become aware that there's a problem. And that awareness takes us next to being able to say out loud, oh, I do have a problem. I do have a situation I need to take care of. Oh, there's something with my well-being I do need to manage. And then we get to this place of acceptance where, okay, I know I have this. I know I'm talking about it. I don't know what to do about it, but let me look at what this means for me. What are the things that I can do? And then we can move into action and do something to help ourselves. It is often challenging for many individuals to go to this place of self-compassion because we many times have ingrained patterns from whether it's from an upbringing, cultural norms, societal norms, but we have these ingrained patterns as humans to be self-critical, to rise to levels of perfectionism. We emphasize achievement to an all-out self-reliance role and not let anybody else help us because we believe we're our own heroes. Whatever we do, many times if we're not careful, that will equal this feeling of unworthiness and this undeservingness of needing self-compassion. We won't allow ourselves to be compassionate with ourselves because there's no space and time for it. And therefore, that's where we get with educators when we go, I don't have time for self-care. I don't need that. I just need to suck it up and move on. And so sometimes in order to get to this place of self-compassion, we have to stop ourselves in our tracks and recognize that negative self-talk. So that's the first thing I want to do and offer you some ways, some actual tangible ways to get to that level of self-compassion. First of all, recognize, take that thought captive. Understand when I'll use myself as an example. When I'm in the negative talk and I'm like, oh, you stupid, you shouldn't have done that. I will have to, number one, recognize that it's negative talk and that I need to be encouraging myself because there may not be anybody in the moment to encourage me. And then I need to challenge myself and challenge that self-criticism and say, you know what? It's okay to make mistakes. It's okay. Everyone does. What can I learn from this? Where's the silver lining in this? What do I need to do differently? And then I would encourage you once you get to this place of like, oh, I keep doing this or I keep attacking myself here, replace it and practice some affirmations. And I want to stop here for a second and encourage you that if you're not in my Facebook group for this podcast, I encourage you to go over to Facebook and search for the name of this podcast. Every Monday through Friday, I put biblical affirmations in the group where you can take that affirmation based on the scripture of the week and apply it to your life. So if you're looking for affirmations that you can do that help you get through this, help you build some resilience, help you to really build up that self-compassion, there's no better compassion teacher than Jesus. And so whatever you're doing, I would encourage you to find some affirmations that make sense to you, that you can put in place to help you combat that negative talk and really be able to treat yourself with care, which is number four. A lot of times educators will say, I don't need self-care. I don't have time for self-care. Who has self-care time? We cannot give from an empty bucket. And you've got to be able to find a way to build your own resilience and your coping strategies and your own emotional well-being in order to give to your students. Number five, I would encourage you to cultivate gratitude. Focus on moments of gratitude. Often my kids would get into these negative, whiny, complaining modes, and it would drive me crazy because everything out of their mouth would be negative. Whenever they would tell me, I would welcome their thoughts, but then if it got to be to the point where I was seeing that this was becoming a character flaw, I might say to them, thank you for sharing that. I'm glad to know that there's a problem. But I'm wondering if you can give me three things you're grateful for right now. And I would try to help them flip that script and come up with, and they would say things like the sun, my toys, my house or whatever. I didn't care what it was. I just wanted them to see that there were things in life that they could be grateful for. And then the fun thing was many times these kids would repeat that throughout the days and then they wouldn't be allowed to say the same thing that they're grateful for. So they'd have to have a whole list of things. If you have a hard time getting into gratitude, remember, gratitude cannot survive with negative thinking. If you flip the script, the gratitude can often replace that, and it starts to lift our spirits and helps us find things that we're thankful for. I want to take a moment and say, I'm not minimizing this. There is a level of depth to this, to where this could potentially be life-changing for you. If you feel like this has gotten to a place that's way deep, you're struggling way hard, it's just taking you to a level of darkness that feels like it's not able to come back to, I really want to encourage you to seek support. There's different levels of support, and this is so important. Reach out to some friends that can help you through this, some family members. And if you feel like they're not listening to you, or they're not seeing it, or getting to the depth of it, or minimizing what you're going through, please take this seriously. I would encourage you to even find a mental health profession. Most educators have insurance, and it covers mental health these days. Find some support and encouragement. Share your struggles. Share your struggles with self-compassion there, and ask for some guidance, and they will walk through this with you. If you don't know how to do that and you're not sure if that's really the avenue you want to go down, I am more than happy to spend 15 minutes on the phone with you to help you figure out if this is something that you really need to do. Email me at societieschildpodcast@gmail.com. I would absolutely love to be able to help you get the help that you need in order to make this shift in life, because our kids really depend on this. Developing that sense of compassion is so important, because it does help us build that resilience that we need, and it helps us come up with the coping strategies. So my friends, I want to give you 3 action steps to take away from this. I know I gave a lot of stuff above and that we're talking about here, but I really want to help you if this is somewhere you feel like it's starting to creep in for you. Number one, I want you to maintain perspective. Remember that while you play an important role in these kids' lives and these challenging behaviors, my friends, you are not solely responsible for their well-being. The things that are going on with these kids have happened over time, and it's going to take a lot of time for them to get figured out for them. You can do what's in your control. You can file the report. You can make the referral. You can have the conversations. But beyond that, you have to let go of what's not yours. You have to tell yourself, what's my side of the street? Where can I step in? What kind of environment can I create that's safe? How can I build this relationship? And beyond that, we have to let it go. And that's where we as educators have to be able to cut that tie from that emotional connection. I want to encourage you, when you do those referrals or you do make that effort to help that child, celebrate those small victories and acknowledge the progress that you're making. Acknowledge what you are doing. Acknowledge the fact that the behaviors in your class are big, and the behaviors on your campus and coming into your office every day are huge. No matter what you're doing incrementally to help this child, celebrate it. Keep your perspective that you are doing an awesome job in everything that you're doing. If it means keeping a journal and keeping track of that, so be it. That would be awesome, but maintain that perspective. Number two, I want to encourage you to cultivate those positive coping strategies. That means that you need to find a way to help you. You need to process the emotions that come along with these big behaviors, the experiences. Sometimes we take on our kids' angst, and we need to have a coping mechanism for that. Where's your outlet? You need to have engaging, creative outlets. Maybe you're into music or art or writing. Maybe you spend time in nature. You like going to listen to bands play. Maybe you like to be with people, or maybe you like to be by yourself and reading. Whatever it is, find an outlet or a coping mechanism or a way to process, or whatever strategies you need in life for you. If you're in a situation you've got to see someone professionally, allow yourself that grace to do that. Your job is big. These situations are big. You're not meant to handle this all by yourself. I promise you, my friends. Number three, and I think is one of the hardest for us to do, no matter where we are on our campus, establish boundaries. Set clear boundaries to protect your emotional well-being. Identify your limits. Know what you're able to take. Know what your level of compassion is. Know what your level of communication is. And assertively put those in place with your students, with your colleagues, your supervisors, your teachers, whoever you're working with. You've got to put your boundaries in place. And I know sometimes education systems, they have a way of encroaching on our boundaries. but as it pertains to our kids and the big behaviors, you've got to have your boundaries and what your limits are. If this happens, then X happens. If A happens, then B happens. I was always taught in the recovery world to ask for what I need and then let go of the result. At least I want to be heard. I may not always be heard, but I am doing my best to exert my boundaries. If your boundaries are compromised, then what's next? What can you do to maintain your emotional well-being? I would encourage you to look into Henry Cloud. He has great books on boundaries. There's all kinds of people out there that write on boundaries. Find ways to do them if that is your weak area. So again, that's maintain perspective, get some coping strategies, and establish some boundaries. My sweet educator friends, as we strive to build these trauma-responsive campuses, I want to encourage you to remember that resilience and self-compassion are our greatest assets. We have to be strong enough to be unwavering leaders so we can continue to inspire greatness in our students. Every interaction, every moment counts. I challenge you, embrace resilience, cultivate compassion, and create environments where every child feels seen, valued, and safe. But also, create environments or create your own world where you feel seen, valued, and safe. Those are those boundaries. That's part of the coping mechanism. Together, if we do this together, we can continue to champion the hope, ignite the passion, and pave the way so that every student thrives. But remember, our students can't thrive if we're not thriving. So rise to the challenge, for greatness awaits in the hearts and minds of our students. Together, let's make this happen.
Hey, amazing educators, thanks for tuning in. If you found this episode helpful, I'd love for you to hit subscribe and leave a review. Even better, share this episode with a colleague. And hey, I'd love to connect with you on social media. You can even join my Facebook group for some extra support and a dash of inspiration. I've left all the links in the show notes. Until next time, my friend, remember, you're not alone on this journey. You've got this. Keep making a difference and stay teach-tastic.